Chris Cetullo here with John Zimmerman for the latest installment of That's History. John is an historian with the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, our partner on this feature. And each time we take a look at a current day issue that has echoes, parallels, or lessons from history. John, this week our topic is curfews, particularly curfews for youth. The city of Philadelphia is working on extending and tightening up its curfew law in the wake of the so-called flash mob violence in the course of this year. But curfews have a pretty extensive history.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's important for listeners to realize, first of all, that the curfew that was established in the wake of the flash mobs wasn't the first curfew in Philadelphia. Indeed, there's been one in effect for many, many years. And curfews themselves go back really 100 years. There was a big boom in curfews starting around the 1880s. And we think that by 1900, at least 3,000 different cities and towns had a youth curfew in place.
What spurred that interest 100 years ago?
The first and most important thing was the great wave of immigration that began in the 1880s and extended really until the First World War that brought 36 million people here from mostly Southern and Eastern Europe. And they concentrated in cities, I think, in ways that were unprecedented. And the presence of all these immigrants, and especially these immigrant families with so many children, was threatening to the people that already lived in the cities. And I think that was a big engine for these curfews.
And sometimes curfews don't apply just to youth. Sometimes they're extended to cover all the adults in a city or in a particular area. What are the particular issues that that raises?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the first curfews in this country were actually targeted at African Americans, specifically slaves, and that across the slave South, there were curfews for slaves, 6 p.m., 8 p.m., that tragically extended well beyond emancipation. So well into the 20th century, you can find hundreds of so-called sundown towns across America, especially the American South. A sundown town is a place where African Americans have to be off the streets by sundown. We have other examples of curfews that were in some places targeted at other racial minorities as well.
Philadelphia's latest attempt to extend and enforce the curfew applies the center city, essentially the business and entertainment district. Was that true also in the 19th century that the curfew was more about keeping these, if I could use the phrase, unruly immigrant masses away from residents and from the commercial district?
It extended across the city, by the way, as did and as does Philadelphia's youth curfew. I think everybody should understand that actually there is a citywide curfew for youth in Philadelphia. On weekdays, if you're under 13, it's 9 p.m. If you're between 13 and 17, it's 10:30 p.m. And on the weekends, everyone has to be home by midnight. That's a kind of standard issue youth curfew that existed in Philadelphia before this latest incarnation, which is 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday night for Center City and University City.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, the vast majority of curfews across time have been citywide. There's no question that there's a particular concern about the behavior of kids in these, entertainment districts or in downtown districts, but most of the curfews, like Philadelphia's, or citywide.
Now, what's the batting average or the track record of curfews as you look back through history and into the current age?
Having reviewed as much as I can about this subject, I think the consensus is that we don't know. There's very weak evidence for the claim that youth curfews have brought down crime. They're quite popular, that is, voters like them. And to be fair, they're also logical. If kids are getting into trouble, it makes sense to try to get them off the streets. But it's very hard to show that these curfews have had any pronounced or prolonged effect on youth crime or youth behavior. Keep in mind, the concept of adolescence itself is a rather new one and really dates to the turn of the 20th century. And the curfews, I think, are a kind of a great illustration of a new kind of age consciousness. You have child labor laws. You have high schools becoming mass institutions, and high schools, of course, are age-graded. And then you have this new concept of adolescence, which means somebody who is neither a kid, that is, not a child, nor an adult.
When you look back at previous curfews, or the waxing and waning, what leads to an easing of curfew or a reduced reliance on them?
Well, look, I think the best way to think about curfews is they're not really about kids. They're about adults. And what I mean is whenever we get worried that the kids are out of control, we enact a curfew. And there have been waves. There was a wave in the 1920s during the era of Prohibition, even though it appears that juvenile crime is going down during those years. There was a perception that, especially in the era of the speakeasy, that the kids were breaking the Prohibition laws and other laws. There was another wave of curfews in the 1950s during the so-called juvenile delinquency scares. And then during the Clinton years, in the 90s, there was another one where Clinton himself actually signed a measure to help local governments enact curfews. These are all times when there was a particular worry about the kids being out of control, just like there was a worry during the flash mob events. And look, sometimes the worry is justified. The kids in the flash mobs were out of control. It's just it turns out that we don't really have good statistics, a reason to believe that curfews will help get them into control.
And the rise or reliance on curfews, how does it map against actual juvenile crime rates in the country?
Well, again, you know, sometimes curfews are enacted when the rates rise, and the Clinton years are a good example of that. Actually, just before Clinton became president, between about 1988 and 1992, there was a big spike in juvenile crime. Nobody really knows why. You know, the curfews that were enacted during the Clinton years were a direct response to the rise in measured juvenile crime rates. But then there are other times, as in the 1920s, when we know that juvenile crime was going down, it's just the perception was that it was going up.
And how much of this might be mass media driven, that the perception that crime is going up is because we're so much more deft and quick to cover these incidents than perhaps in previous times?
Oh, I think that's a huge factor. I mean, and the poll literature is very clear about this. You know, you ask Americans, what's happened to crime, leaving aside juvenile crime, what's happened to violent crime since the 1980s? And most of them will tell you that it's gone up. And this is just false. You know, almost every kind of measurable violent crime has gone down pretty steadily since the 1970s. There have been, you know, there have been blips and little peaks and valleys. But violent crime has actually decreased over the past quarter century, but people don't know it. And I think one reason has to do with media coverage, especially local television news, which tends to be quite dominated by crime. You know, there's kind of a standard issue shot where, you know, somebody is killed or injured, and they immediately send cameras to try to get what's often known as the bloody shirt. You know, the shot of whoever was injured or their corpse. And, you know, that affects the way people think. I also think it distorts the way people think.
Okay, one final question for you, John Zimmerman. Do you know where your children are?
Well, one of them is in college, and I don't think she obeys any curfew. Like every college student I know, including the ones that I teach, she stays up to all hours and sometimes out at all hours. The other one is still in high school, and so she's pretty well underfoot.
That's John Zimmerman with the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, and that's our chat this week for That's History. John, a pleasure as always.
Thanks. It was fun.